And welcome back to episode 131 of the Weekly Tech Round with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
We are back again for the latest roundup of all of the tech news, strange stories, and other, I guess, weird stuff going on in the world of tech. And this week is no different to any of those things. We're going to talk encryption. We're going to talk Twitter, but not quite what you think. We're going to talk about ChatGPT and how, quite frankly, it needs to start making money. IBM are getting sued again. Yes, that does happen quite often. And the Red Cross would like you to stop killing people in your multiplayer games. But we'll talk more about that in a minute. And of course, the Tech Rat Rumor Mill is back this week with no Apple products. Hold the front page. We're going to talk Microsoft and we're going to talk Google. But let's talk about, the Digital Online Safety Bill then, the UK's Online Safety Bill, which is currently... Well, it hasn't quite been ratified yet. Still being sort of talked about, isn't it? It is actually a set of laws which is designed, according to the government, to protect not only children but adults as well. Their online safety, and covers a wide gamut of areas and technologies. And one of those is around a clause that says that basically end-to-end encryption could almost be illegal, really, couldn't it, for some applications or some services?
Yeah. And I think some of the people that provide end-to-end encryption have kind of had enough, and they put out a joint open letter, haven't they? From WhatsApp, Signal, Threema, Viber, amongst others. And basically they accuse the bill of posing, posing an unprecedented threat to privacy, safety and security of every UK citizen and the people with whom they communicate around the world, while emboldening hostile governments who may seek to draft copycat laws. It's quite a statement.
I mean,
they're not wrong, but it's quite a statement.
The argument is that, well, if a Western democracy such as the UK can impose such stringent laws, then why can't we, in insert name of local dictatorship?
Well, exactly, yeah. It keeps coming back to this encryption, doesn't it? And the government keeps thinking that you can have encryption that only the good guys can break into, but the bad guys won't be able to. And as they put out on that, that's just not possible. You can't have it both ways. It's either encrypted for all or not encrypted.
Well, I was just going to say, how does the government think that somehow there's going to be this magic encryption that, you know, the bad threat actors are going to be unable to break? You know, they can't touch that. This is government encryption.
You hit the nail on the head. The word is think. I'm not sure they've done any of it.
Well,
spoken to anyone that actually has a clue about encryption.
Well, no, and we've talked about this before, and it just kind of boggles the mind that nobody in the industry is working with the government to say, whoa, stop. Actually, they probably are, and they've probably just been told with one hand, shh.
They've got their fingers in their ear. They're not actually listening.
No, I mean, and the government, though, I think kind of almost is a hypocrite here, going that, you know, it acknowledges privacy risks, as you say, but the intention isn't for the bill to be interpreted this way. Oh, yeah. When has a law never been used for it? You know, like...
That's not the intention, is it? Well, if it's not the intention,
then why
to do that, just put that in the rules then. Put that in the law.
The fact that
encryption is excluded.
Well, yeah, the fact that even the UN has got involved, haven't they?
Yeah.
They're like, whoa, back it up a minute here. You know, actually, this is not a good idea.
This is a paradigm shift that raises a host of serious problems with potentially dire consequences.
Yeah, it's like, actually, UK, you need to stop what you're doing. This is it. It hasn't been pushed through yet, you know, but it is getting closer and closer, isn't it, to, being ratified as law.
I know.
So there have been several sessions during the period of Parliament 21 to 22 the year, and of course now the 22-23 Parliament at the moment. And it is, you know, it is being pushed back. I'm puzzling.
I mean, wouldn't it be lovely to actually have someone as a prime minister who's actually even just a little bit tech literate, that kind of understands these things? It's pie in the sky thinking going on.
I mean, what's worrying is when you look at it on, so if you go to bills.parliament.uk, which is where all of the laws, you know, say, this is actually quite far down the line. So at the moment, it has cleared the House of Commons. So which means, you know, so if you're unfamiliar with UK government, The House of Commons is Parliament. This is where, you know, our Prime Minister and the MPs, so the elected representatives, sit. Once a bill or a law has been, I guess, approved or ratified at that stage, it moves to the House of Lords, which is the other chamber of government, where it is then debated. There are committee reports. And then if it's agreed at that stage, it goes to the King for royal assent, which is basically a rubber stamp, isn't it, effectively?
Yeah.
You know, at that stage, let's be honest, it's not going to get stopped. But it's cleared the House of Commons and it's halfway down. It's at the committee stage of the House of Lords. There are only two more stages after that, report and third reading. And then it goes to the final stage for amendments and royal assent. It's just absolutely nuts. If you say that nobody here beyond the government and its perhaps so-called advisors appears to be kind of, I don't know, picking this up. You're right, you can't hack, the bottom line comes down. Amongst other things, so we're only concentrating on the encryption part of the online safety bill at the moment. Yeah. So there are other elements. The fact that they just, you know, you can't have, it's like saying guns. I'm sorry. Only the government is allowed guns. Nobody else can have guns. Yes, but what about all the criminals that already got them?
Oh, sorry. Only the good guys are allowed guns.
Yeah.
Be that's more right, vague. Yeah. Only the good guys.
Yeah. So who are the good guys? Exactly.
Yeah.
It just is absolutely bonkers, isn't it? Just bonkers, you know.
I know. And even the fact that the UK government says, you know, it does pose privacy risks, but it'll be all okay. That is not reassuring in the slightest, is it?
Is this just because, you know, of all the WhatsApp leaks that we had the other year with, you know, one of our ministers, you know, during COVID?
Yeah. Well, let's do a trial run where the government gives the police or some good guy access to all the encryption keys for their comms, and we'll see how that goes or how safe they feel about it.
Oh, you mean not the back door, but the locked door?
The locked door, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There is no back door. We have a locked door that you can't have the keys and you'll never break them because it's super, super strong.
Yeah. I imagine if we made the, you know, people in the House of the Parliament, the members there, all trial this first, it won't go anywhere.
I was just going to say,
it'd be shut down when the first couple, they wouldn't even start. They'd be like, oh, no, not for us.
Yeah. And that is it as well, isn't it?
That's exactly it. Tells you all you need to know. If they're not willing to do it first, then it's not a good deal.
Oh.
Moving on before I get enraged at it.
So, talking of bills, literally a bill of money. So obviously, you know, if you've been living under a rock, you know, Twitter is going through some changes. And one of those changes is around how you access the API. Now, up till recently, I think it was free pretty much, wasn't it?
It was free, yep.
Anybody can access the API. You could build bots on the API. And we'll come back to that in a minute.
All sorts of things
on the API. You know, however, of course, Elon, in his quest to plug the gap of money that appears to be evaporating very quickly, but he's saying that, you know, that too many people are ripping off, in his words, the Twitter database, demonetizing it, i.e. removing ads, and then selling data to others. So by doing that, he now says you've got to pay to use the API. However, there are different levels of cost for API. So if you are an enterprise customer, you're going to be looking at around $42,000 a month to access the new API.
Starting price. Yes. So Microsoft aren't willing to pay this. And they've announced they're dropping Twitter from its digital marketing center, or DMC, which is basically a social media management tool. You know, it covers campaigns on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and until recently, Twitter. They don't fancy paying the starting price of $42,000 a month. And I'm pretty sure their bill won't be just $42,000 a month, will it? It'll be considerably more, I imagine.
I suspect a lot more. You know, is this going to be like one of those pay-to-play things based on your income? Microsoft, you've got a lot of money. You're going to pay more, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I was actually, for this article, I went and had a look at what their API plans were, and they're laughable. I mean, right, so you can still have a free plan, but it's write only, so you can't use it to read any content out of it, only to write content. It's rate limited. You can only get 1,500 tweets per month at the app level, one app ID. So basically, it's only for testing your app to write into the works. They do offer a basic plan for $100 a month, but even this is basically useless for anyone. Again, it's rate limited. You can get 3,000 tweets per month at the user level, but you can't go more than 50,000 tweets per month at the app level. And that's writing. And you've got a 10,000 tweets per month at the app level reading and two app IDs. So basically, even if you were a developer building an app that interacted with Twitter, as soon as you've got more than a couple hundred users using your app, it's dead in the water. You can't use it. You then have to move up to the $42,000 a month starting price for the enterprise plan.
So nobody's going to do it.
No, nobody. They've basically killed all API access. Yeah, other than I suppose people want to mine data and have a lot of money. But
it's a very, very niche, isn't it? You're looking at a very niche set of customers here who are going to have the pockets deep enough to spend, $42,000 a month and paying what, basically $500,000 a year minimum to access Twitter's API. You've got to be having some serious return off that. And if I may, also, this is linked, isn't it? You know, remember a few months ago when we reported on, obviously, the Twitter third-party clients getting canned, weren't they?
Yep, exactly. So there's no indie developer that can afford to actually build an app using these new plans.
No, absolutely nuts. I mean, and you just think to yourself, why do it? I mean, Twitter, it needs to remonetize areas that clearly...
Yes, I agree to an extent, but this just seems like the wrong way of doing it.
Surely
there needs to be more in the middle. There needs to be further options.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And Microsoft, you said, made their position quite clear, haven't they? They've explained how much they do. They almost have said, you know, they also have made clear that they make a lot of money off digital advertising revenue, don't they? You know, in particular, $12 billion, I think they stated, didn't they? That's created via their applications. That wasn't, I think they're saying, you know, revenue that's ads that would have been created, managed, and run through its advertising platform. Mm. Now, Elon Musk has also stated that he also thinks that in other news, that this is linked to our next story, that Microsoft have been using, you know, ChatGPT and other thing and other data from Twitter in particular to train Bing Chat and its search features, isn't it? And that's what the OSC is threatening to sue him for.
Yeah, his tweet said they trained illegally using Twitter data, lawsuit time. I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
No, this is a man, you know, who this is a man who needs to have a team of lawyers on standby just to read him back in. You can't keep threatening. And again, you know, this isn't some, you know, individual that you're taking to court here, Elon. This is probably the second most valuable company in the world that's had its fair share of legal battles.
And I'm still trying to work out what was illegal about it. So were they illegally accessing Twitter data, which surely wasn't the case because it was a free open API, or was the fact that they were using user data the illegal part? But then again, it was public data on the internet with a free API and terms and conditions pretty much said once you put it on there, it's free for everyone. So yeah, I'm trying to find out what the illegal part of this was.
Well, that's it, isn't it? If you're leveraging a free API, how can you be stealing data?
And now it's no longer a free API. They're stopping using it.
Yes, exactly. So this is classic Elon, though, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Who can I shout at or make, you know, enough
noise? Yet another advertising platform dropping Twitter.
Yeah, which, and also, talking of advertising, did you see the latest thing, though, that Twitter now says that all advertisers have to be verified?
Is that verified as in paid or verified as in Elon's giving it to them?
Well, blue tick, right? So they're saying blue tick. So I saw a couple of things. Some people are like, well, in that case, then I'm going to create a Chrome extension that blocks all blue ticks.
Yeah, there's a bit of a backlash going on the interwebs about the blue tick, isn't there?
So not only now will I, somebody pointed out, well, that's great, you're going to block all ads. And then somebody else pointed out, well, hang on a minute. You know, you're going to block other people. And they were like, well, hang on, they're like, fine, I'll add a feature into this that you can add in accounts that you don't
want. Whitelist it, yeah, some whitelisting accounts.
But so, yeah, so they, people have worked out now you can ad block on Twitter.
Oh, dear.
According to recent reports, though, Twitter have increased their subscriber count.
But as in paid subscribers.
Yeah.
Not as in people using Twitter.
No. Twitter, apparently they have increased the number of subscribers recently. So I did see someone, I'll have to try and find it for the next show. There was an uptick in revenue based on subscriber numbers. I can't remember where their Saturday source came from, but yeah, they basically, okay. There has been an uptick. So, you know, I guess it's the old adage of there is no such thing as... there's no such thing as bad press, is there, so they say, you know?
No, and I've heard, while not great numbers, I think the people actually paying, it was around 350,000 people, which isn't a huge amount considering Twitter's user numbers, but it's something. Don't think it's going to keep the company afloat.
No, I don't think it's going to keep the company afloat, but something's going to give, you know, and I think, potentially speaking, are we looking, you know, down the line of Twitter being sold off again? I wonder. Depends how things go, but that's another story for another day.
And there's that other competitor, isn't there, Blue Sky? The beta? I've signed up, but I've not received my invite yet.
So I haven't done it yet. I have seen a lot of people posting online on Twitter, amusingly.
yes, about what their new Blue Sky hashtag is, yeah? Or ideas.
Hang on a minute, that looks really like Twitter, doesn't it? You know,
it does. So I have signed up, but I am probably way down the line of actually getting an invite to this. So we will see. But if I get an invite, then I'll have a play and see who's on there and we'll report back.
Yeah, but did you notice it also looks very looking like Mastodon in the way it puts? So it's username dot something dot social.
It is, but it's a single server or single.
It is.
Yes, it's not. It's multiple server thingy.
No, I wonder how long that will stay before it's just changed to a username or an identity.
Oh, yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah. But, you know, we will report back on if we get access via the beta. Anyway, let's talk about ChatGPT. So, you know, unashamedly, absolute big fan here, at least, of ChatGPT. Yep. And Bard as well. By the way, Bard has had an upgrade. Bard can now do coding.
Can it?
Yes, I haven't tried it yet. But who knows? We'll soon find out. You're asking the wrong person. So a new report has come out that ChatGPT, and this is an estimate by my lad, is costing around $700,000 a day to run, which, according to an analyst, Dylan Patel at Semi-Analysis, reckons that is 36 cents per query to run. So that's a lot of queries.
That's a lot of money as well. 700K a day. Apparently, a lot of that comes from the cost of running and buying these NVIDIA GPUs it's all based on. And analysts are estimating that OpenAI will need another 30,000 NVIDIA GPUs this year alone.
Oh my God.
Wowza. Those aren't your £1,000, 40, 70 or whatever. These are the H100 and A100s at $25,000 a pop or whatever they are, yeah.
Now, I like it. I won't lie. I really, really like it, okay?
Yeah.
And what I have found is that it certainly is more responsive than it used to be. I'm not getting so many of those, we can't access it at the moment due to demand, you know, that error message. That's not as frequent as I had a little while ago.
I meant to ask, are you a paying customer yet? I wasn't sure if you'd actually splashed the cash because you were using stupid of me, but I wasn't sure. I thought maybe, just maybe, because I know you do use it a lot and get value out of it, but I wasn't sure if you were actually
paying cash. I'm sorry. To be honest with you, right? It's $20 a month.
Which is unreasonable.
I am not yet at the place where I'm going to pull the trigger, but I tell you now, I would imagine by the end of this year, if it carries on the way it's going, I will pull the trigger on it. Because in all seriousness, I get a lot of value out of it. And I've used it in a very serious point of view, we've joked about other things, but I've used it to create, you know, speaking proposals. I've used it to help me craft narratives. I've helped it to write letters, you know. And I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday, actually a teenager, he was asking about, like, you know, what do I do for a living and cybersecurity? And we've gone to the conversation around, you know, it used to be the joke was, wasn't it? You know, it's Google is your best friend, you know, and it's, it wasn't basically, you know, anybody can Google, you know, anybody can use Google and type something in. It's how do you interpret the output, but also how do you craft the right input, the prompt, isn't it, to Google to get the right information?
It's like anything, it's a tool, and it's how well you can use that tool, isn't it?
And ChatGPT, as we said, is no different. And it is all about learning to create the right prompt and then refining that prompt to get the information. And I'll be honest with you, I am constantly amazed by spit out. What I tend to find is if I'm writing a narrative, like I got it to write some blog posts the other day for me as kind of an experiment. And what it is, I take those blog posts out. Sometimes if I like them, I'll post them straight. I'll be like, you know, let's see how this goes. Yeah. Otherwise, I take them and I drop them into Grammarly, and I'll then use Grammarly, which I am a paying customer of, to help me then refine the syntax and, you know, the way, you know, the vocabulary, because let's be honest, you know, sometimes what it spits out word wise isn't probably quite how you or I would speak.
No, exactly.
So, but you know, I think it is there, but yeah, $700,000 a day to run it. I mean, I don't know how many paying subscribers they have, because I don't think the information's there.
No.
But yeah, I mean, because so on that point though, chips, Microsoft themselves have got a chip under development, haven't they? Athena,
yes, yes. Apparently it's far along enough, though, that it's actually being tested by select groups internally at Microsoft. So it's actual real silicon. They are testing it. Not the aim to completely get rid of NVIDIA. Apparently there's still a place for that, but to massively reduce their costs by putting a lot of load on these Athena chips and obviously popping them into Azure.
Yeah, so I guess, you're right. Perhaps it might be that NVIDIA does the, I don't know, maybe the grunt work, and, you know, the training and model of the LLMs and other things could be done by Athena. Apparently, according to some reports, they've been under development since 2019, but could be available to, could be available to public users and OpenAI by 2024, according to some reports.
Not long.
Not long at all. I mean, let's be honest, you know, Microsoft have probably had a lot closer relationship with OpenAI than we probably are aware of before they made their, you know, large investment.
Of course, yeah.
And OpenAI is going to want to leverage, you know, any other computing power it can, isn't it? You know, not to say they can't get NVIDIA.
Surely.
Yeah, of course they do. Now, is the money here, you know, is Microsoft going to buy OpenAI at some point? You know, I don't think that's outside the realms of possibility. No. But on the other hand, keeping it independent might play into Microsoft's hands a little bit, because then there is no regulatory oversight, is there? There's no kind of competition monopolies. But on the other hand, they can keep feeding it, trading it, and it can get cross pollination between the data sets. So yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic to see how this goes. But yeah, we'll for see. Me,
yes.
Pandora's box is open. That's the only way I can describe it.
So, talking of chips,
with fish or
just fish? No. Well, the silicon kind. Yes, GlobalFoundries apparently suing IBM. They're accusing them of licensing chip making know-how to Intel and another foundry upstart called Rapidus. Rapidus.
One of the two.
Yeah, but basically when it has no right to do so. So I think this all started, GlobalFoundries acquired IBM's microelectronics division back in 2015. Yeah. And part of the deal, it obtained the sole and exclusive rights to license and disclose IBM's chip-making technology. Although it's now alleging that through the IBM-Intel partnership that started back in 2021 and another partnership with Rapidus that started back in 2022, IBM is basically giving away 2-nanometer process tech, which it has no right to do so. This is going to be an interesting one to see, because obviously 2015 was quite a while ago, and I presume they weren't working on 2-nanometer tech back then, but is it using a lot of technology that they did have back then they're now using to make this 2-nanometer? In which case, they're probably... I don't know, but this is going to be a murky one.
I'm puzzled here by this, because it's almost a bit like you say, I think you forgot to give us something here. But on the other hand, though, it's like, what the hell? I mean, Intel are asking for information on chip making from IBM. I mean, I know the PowerPC was quite impressive, but I mean, it wasn't quite what I expected.
I know. It's in the article, IBM did release information on 2-nanometer processes. And then several months later, Intel did. And then like a couple of months later, this Rapidus does. And they've all got partnerships with IBM. So it's a safe assumption it's all the same tech.
It is. I mean, it's but we were saying in the kind of the show, the preamble before we came online.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the old, was it the NFTs, isn't it? It's like, well, I've got this great NFT. You're welcome to have it, but I'm just going to keep one back for myself. You know, yours is still the original. It's all good. Yours is definitely still the original.
Just have a copy of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like a news how I want.
I mean, so it is a bit odd, to be honest with you, on this point, isn't it? That what is going on here? And I guess, you know, IBM are still very current. You know, people seem to forget that. They might not be doing their own chips, but they are, you know, they've been working on chips for a long time.
They have,
you know,
yeah.
They're currently on the, you know, working on their own quantum computing capabilities. They still keep very, very, very current in that. But yeah, from a GlobalFoundries perspective, it is very much like you've just done this twice behind our back now. I think it's... I think you seem to have forgotten who owns what, isn't it?
You know, yeah, so. And they're apparently seeking compensatory punitive damage as well as an injunction against IBM preventing, you know, them from further unlawful disclosure and use of GlobalFoundries trade secrets. I mean, if they get an injunction on this, it's proved right, it could be very tricky for Intel, especially when it's trying to release its 2-nanometer stuff in a year or two.
Yeah, but there is some irony to this conversation as well, though, isn't there? That actually back in 2021... IBM sued GlobalFoundries over their failure to actually deliver chips.
Well, yes.
You know, and there was a, you know, a factor of the fact that they, you know, made promises from a roadmap perspective. You know, IBM had an issue with its own server roadmap lineup because they were expecting on the CPUs that were being delivered by, or should we say, developed by GlobalFoundries. And, you know, they were, back then, they were suing for $2.5 billion in damages.
It's just tit for tat, isn't it?
It is a bit, isn't it, really? I don't know. I just, you know, GlobalFoundries is in a unique position, isn't it, where they are at the moment, and what they, you know, they are, you know, they've gone from, I guess, having, you know, quite a large slice of the market. Now, you know, TSMC are very much eating that away. Intel have re-entered the fab business as well. You know, and you're right, there are these other startups that are using it from a development standpoint as well. So it's a very warm place to be, I suspect, at the moment, in the world of fabs, you know, and silicon.
Yeah.
I don't know. So this, at the moment, there isn't any information as they're going, you know, where this is. No. It's currently just in a legal limbo, I suspect, is the right way to decide.
Yeah, we've got no dates or trials or anything like that at the moment. So, yeah. Well, if we hear anything, we'll let you know.
Yes. Peters, by the way, did you say they were Japanese, weren't they? Is that what they were?
Some Japanese? Oh, I'm not. I didn't actually look to see what they were, yeah.
Yeah, I think when I was looking at my research, they are backed by the Japanese government.
Okay.
Yeah, so backed by the Japanese government, and it's part of the Japanese government's push, again, does this sound familiar? To bring in commercial control over... their chip CPU supply chain, and also provide homegrown chips and CPUs for their own industry as well. So, yeah, again, another familiar story that we've seen post-pandemic, isn't it?
It is. Okay, you fancy a laugh?
Oh, always up for a laugh.
This is an odd one. Okay, so it's a noble effort, I'm going to say, but I'm still laughing on the inside. Basically, the world-renowned humanitarian organization, the Red Cross, they've launched a new campaign called Play by the Rules, okay? And this is a set of 4 rules you should abide by when playing first-person shooters. So a bit outside their normal work, but basically they're challenging you to play FPS by the real rules of war and show everyone that even war has rules, okay? So these rules, all right? We've got 4 of them. First one is no firsting. Now, I didn't know what that meant, but basically it means you can't shoot people while they're down, okay? So as that would violate real-life rules of war that protect prisoners from violence, intimidation, and ill treatment. So if you shot one in Call of Duty in the knee, he falls down, you can't then shoot him in the head. Okay? Note, you're not winning that game. Unless it's a one-shot kill. No targeting non-violent NPCs, so non-player characters. No targeting civilian buildings. And this is the great one. Use med kits on everyone.
So, have they ever played online games?
I don't know. In real life, the rules of war stipulate, you know, the wounded on both sides must be cared for. So again, if you shoot someone in your FPS and he hasn't quite died, you need to give him a med kit, even if he's the opposition. He'll then get up and shoot you in the head point blank.
But that's not how the mechanics of these games work. You can't. So if I'm playing Battlefield 2042, you know, with you, and we shoot an enemy combatant who I'm under heavy fire, I cannot, through the game mechanics, pull out my med kit and revive him. No. A, because I'm going to die anyway in the game. And B, I'm not allowed to. It doesn't work.
No, you only med kit your own team. So, noble, but not sure it's really going to work. Although, but they did do, some streams, didn't they? They did do some Twitch streams, apparently.
Yeah.
They weren't very exciting. Well, they were quite funny, but they weren't really what the game was about.
No, there are actually rules of war. I don't know if you knew this. You know,
there are,
there are laws of war that were signed back in, I think it was, they're part of the Geneva Convention that was ratified in 1949. And they are a set of, I don't want to say, laws, because they aren't laws in the sense of, you shall not break the law, but they are laws in the sense of that if they're broken, they are the basis for, the war crimes trials that we have today. And a lot of the seems to stem actually from the American Civil War. We had the Lieber Code, which was then brought out from under top of that. Because you think about war previously, before this, was, it was very much a gentleman's sport, war.
Yes.
We're on a horse, we shall charge, straight forward, keep going. Onward, men. And then we had kind of the First World War where, cavalry charges everything out the window, and it was total war. It was like, whoa, hang on a minute, what's going on here? You're attacking civilians? Well, that's not quite a,
Yeah.
So off the back of that then, we had, that period, we had the Hague Convention 1907, which was the first part about it. And then, of course, in the Nuremberg war trials, there were additional guidelines that came out of that. So basically, the bottom lines are the principles of war. War should be limited to achieving the goals that started the war. Territorial control doesn't include destruction. It should be brought as quick end to an end quickly as possible. And people and property that do not contribute to the war effort should be protected against unnecessary destruction and hardship. Looking at you, Putin. So effectively, the laws of wars are intended to mitigate hardship of war by protecting both combatants and non-combatants from unnecessary suffering, safeguarding fundamental human rights of those that fall into the enemy, i.e. prisoners of war and those that are wounded, and of course, ultimately, restoration of peace. Now, that's great. How do you apply that, though, to a full-on deathmatch in, Battlefield, COD, Fortnite?
Yeah.
I get, like you should say, what did you open it with? A noble effort, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, there is one game I'm going to point you to that actually did take this very seriously. So there is a game called Armor 3, which is a, it's a war simulator set in a fictional island in the Mediterranean. And they released a DLC a few years ago called The Laws of War, which focused on international humanitarian law and was put together in agreement with the International Red Cross. And basically, the concept was that the war had finished, and you now were playing as, part of a NGO, non-government organization, to basically go and investigate some war crimes that happened. So there were kind of like flashback scenes where you'd go to somewhere, you'd do something, and then you'd be thrown back to the war itself, and you'd have to find evidence to that. And it, and there was a whole storyline around it. And so there was no killing people, there was no injuring. It was, completely opposite. And they used it to raise money for the International Red Cross. And I think they raised, close to $200,000 or something like that.
Okay,
A lot of money, but not, not as much as probably they earned from the game, in some respects. But it was very interesting. I've got it, I've played it, and it's certainly very different from the other, the other ones that, the game you have. But yeah, I get it. I see what they're saying. And I guess the problem is if you're naive enough to think that that's real, then that's a different problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and usually with these things, like in real life, it requires both sides to play by the same rules, which, as we've seen in modern times, doesn't actually work. No.
But, again, good effort by the International Red Cross. Whether it raises awareness, I don't know. But given obviously the conflict in the Ukraine and obviously Sudan at the moment, which has, you know, recently flared up, perhaps awareness of these things isn't probably a bad thing.
No, definitely.
Are we going to change, you know, how you... Sorry, I've just got visions of me going, you know, in battlefield, taking out the enemy and going, stop, sorry, this man down, we're going to help
him.
Yeah, like, yeah, why are you killing me? What have I done? Okie dokie then. I think that is probably a good place for... Yeah. So, as I said, no Apple rumors
no
this week.
No Apple. Yeah. No. We'll leave those for next week, I'm sure.
What have we got then?
Let's start off with Microsoft. So, I have a fondness for Microsoft Surface line of devices, especially Surface Pros. I've had two personally, and I bought two for the kids, some very reasonable deals on eBay, and they love them. So, big fan in this house. So, apparently, they're going to be releasing two new, slightly different models, okay? So, first up, we're going to get an 11-inch Surface Pro, codename Luxor. So the Surface Pros are traditionally like 13-inch laptops, tablet hybrids, have detachable keyboards. And you can make them just as a tablet, put the keyboard on, use it as a laptop. So you're apparently going to get a new 11-inch Surface Pro, still top spec performance we're aiming for, 120Hz screen, the same, is it 4x3 design of it. So I think they're kind of they seem to be mimicking Apple's iPad Pro lineup. You know, they're two sizes, the larger 12, 13 inch, a smaller 10.5, 11 inch version. So, yeah, I'll be interesting to see those ones. But then another interesting one. So, they have the Surface Go line, which are kind of the cheaper ones. You know, they have very low power Intel chips, etc. So, apparently, the new Surface Go 4, codenamed Tanta, will include ARM processors for the first time. So, specifically the Snapdragon 7C based SoC in their entry level models. And they're claiming it's going to have similar performance to the current Surface Go, but with better power efficiency, longer lasting battery life, etc. Now, that's probably not much to beat. I'm still not sure, though. I mean, you can get the current Surface Go with a Pentium Gold 6500Y, which is a dual core, or a 10th gen Core i3. I'm not sure how an ARM's going to stand up. Maybe.
Yeah, it might do.
It might. I'm not sure. But the benefits of having the ARM, they're obviously the better battery life. Also, the potential for 5G support built in there.
Look, I you know, forgetting the Windows RT first attempt at ARM, yes, which, you know, we shall never mention again. I think Microsoft are on the right path here, because I think we kind of all see that having ARM is the right approach. Isn't it? You know, it's the right approach. Low power, you know, gives you better performance. Yep. But are Qualcomm up to the task? You know, this is a
can
problem.
Potentially give you better performance.
Yeah, Apple have set a benchmark with the M series chips that, quite frankly, and the A series to a degree, that nobody can match right now.
No.
And Windows is, even Windows 11, you know, the ARM version is still quite heavier than OS X. Yeah. Or Mac OS, excuse me, is on its requirements. But that being said, I think if the performance is acceptable, then, you know, you're right. You know, the smaller Go model here is perfect for it, really.
They start like £350. They're a lot more reasonable than I thought they were.
I mean, ultimately, if what you're looking for is a cloud, basically a machine to access the cloud, isn't it?
You know? A Chromebook with Windows, yeah.
Yeah, then... why not? I mean, let's not talk about those very terrible HP devices. Remember those with 32 gig?
I want to say Stream something.
Streambook, isn't it? Or something like that, wasn't it?
I came across one of those in my cupboard the other day, actually. I might fire it up, see if it still works.
Oh, dear God. You know, I think you're right here. I think, you know, this could be good, you know. And there is talk, isn't there, of Windows 12 coming through, you know, which will have more optimizations. So look, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to write it off. Now, the Pro 9 with an ARM chip, yeah, I think we're probably pushing the boat a little bit there, in my opinion. But
the Surface Pro, the 11-inch one with an Intel chip, might be quite a nice little device.
That could, yeah. No, it couldn't be bad to 120Hz. Yeah. Okay. Look, I'm on the fence. I'm not saying no. I'm on the fence. You know?
Okay. Our next one. I'm not so sure about it. So I think it was back in November last year, we talked about Google's Pixel Fold, I think they're going to be
Pixel
calling
Fold,
it.
Fold, yes.
Basically, yeah. the Pixel version of a new foldable phone. But apparently, it's going to be announced at Google I.O. May the 10th, with shipping in June. We have some tech specs leaked as well. So a 5.8-inch external screen, a 7.6 folding display in the middle. Although I've seen some leaked videos recently, and it's sporting some chunky bezels. Certainly a lot more chunky than the Samsung equivalent. But apparently, it will have the most durable hinge of any foldable, for whatever that means.
What sort of statement is that?
I don't know. This is according to Google. I don't know. But it seems like it's quite old tech. Apparently, it's going to have the same Tensor G2 chip that's currently in the Pixel 7. So not the new rumored G3 that's going into the Pixel 8 later this year. Though it will be water resistant, pack a larger battery that, I mean, these are some claims, lasts up to 24 hours in normal use and 72 hours in extreme battery saver mode.
24? I will believe that when I see it.
Yeah, but apparently the cameras might actually even predate the Pixel 6 cameras.
What is this? Is this Google raiding the bargain bin?
I think it is. But then charging you $1,700 starting price.
Dear God. I mean, given the pictures that I've seen, like you've seen, you're right. These are pre-production pictures. You know, let's be honest, it's not the final production. But that bezel almost looks like it has a lip on it around the edge of it as well, doesn't it? I mean,
was that the HTC, the original ones with the chins?
Yeah. Google could surprise us, and I suspect they probably will. But this won't be cheap either, is it? I mean, these aren't...
$1,700 starting price, yeah.
Budget devices, as we've said, it's just... I don't know. I'm not surprised because, let's be honest, folding phones are the next fad. Let's be honest, they are a fad. How often do you see a Galaxy Fold?
I've seen a few floating around, but yeah.
But if you were to go somewhere on a train or something, the bulk of people are going to have a single screen phone, probably an iPhone in a lot of cases. I'm jury's out for me.
Is that a price thing or people just don't want foldables? I suspect it's more of a price thing. If that was a $800 phone, would we see a lot more of them?
Yeah, but I also think the problem is that the foldable phones are still thicker than most
single screen
phones. And until we get to a phone which is, say, let's just take iPhone size, but still foldable, I'm not convinced. I think unless you are an early adopter who loves to really love the bleeding edge, and me and you are not far off that.
No.
But I also want a device that works perfect, well for me.
That's it. I'm still very tempted by the Surface Duos, but as a play thing, I still don't think I can use Android as my main phone.
Oh God,
that's very thin though. That's not much thicker than an iPhone.
No,
it's right. It's a lot thinner than the old Samsung. Galaxy Fold.
It is, but yeah, it's just a thought though. But talking honestly, not a full rumor for today, but the new Pixel tablet has made a kind of unscheduled leak, hasn't it?
Appearance.
So this is, they killed off the Pixel Slate, which actually was a very nice device, though, even though it was badly panned by.
I like
by
the Pixel Books as well. Was it Pixel Books?
Yeah,
the Chromebooks, again, the high-end
very
one.
Nice, very nice. Again, it's kind of how we like to think of what's it, the reference architecture, isn't it? Yeah. Like with NVIDIA. So the new one is the Pixel tablet, which is due to come this year. Now there have been some leaks of it have been shown, but it's also been some fancy stand that shows it almost kind of in a similar look to how the hubs that have just been killed off, isn't it? Very peculiar, but one we're going to follow up on soon. So not a full leak for today, but given we were talking about Pixels, I thought it seemed appropriate.
Why not?
To mention it.
I imagine we might see something more about that at I.O.
I have a strong suspicion we will. Well, on that point, I think it's probably time for us to wrap up for today then. We'll be back next week for episode 132 with all of the latest stories. Of course, you can still find us on Twitter. Yes, we are still there. We're not verified. We're not a verified organization, but we're still there. Say hello. Give us a follow. And that's at Weekly Tech Rant. And of course, all of our show notes and information we've talked about today are on at techrant.online. Please give us a like, share with your friends. And of course, wherever you get your podcast from, search for Weekly Tech Rant and you will find us. And if we're not on that particular one, let us know and we'll update that. So, thanks very much. I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, all.